I'm Corey Weathers. You're listening to Military Culture Shift, a limited series podcast on the impact of war, money, and generational perspective on morale, retention, and leadership. Welcome to another episode of the Military Culture Shift podcast. This is Corey. It's just me today. Hopefully you're not disappointed. I wanted to do something a little bit different for this episode and take a break from the regularly scheduled programming because since the book has come out, as I've continued to do the training that goes with the book, there's new topics and trends that are always coming up. And I wanted to share what I'm seeing and hearing about here in 2024. So this training, Leading Generations or Leading the Next Generation, has been a training that I've been doing for almost, I guess, actually over 2 years now. It was what I taught and realized it was resonating with leaders and family members for long enough that I knew it was actually time to write the book. And so I'm still doing this training. I'm just really building off of what is also available in the book and supported in this podcast. I wanted to share with you some of the questions that are coming up from military leaders, especially if they've read the book and are processing the information that's already been put out. But also, what am I noticing from each of the generations as I do the training and as I talk with everyone? So there's some new stuff that I think has come out, and I definitely don't want to write another book about it, but I wanted to give you kind of some insight of what I'm tracking. My brain loves to study patterns, loves to pick up on these trends. And so once I hear about a topic or somebody asks a question and then I hear it again and again, that's when I really kind of lean in and realize this is something worth paying attention to. And so there are some updates that I think would be helpful for you to know about. So what I think I'd like to do is kind of go down through each of the generations and give you some new vocabulary, some new ways of thinking that I'm seeing each of these generations use in order to describe their values, their motivations, how they tend to like to work, what their expectations are. So we'll go through the different generations. And then I'm also going to share with you some of the biggest questions, but also topics that are coming up in these discussions that probably are coming up for you as well. Or maybe you're noticing some of these trends yourself and just haven't had a way to verbalize them or put them in language yet. So that's kind of what we're going to do today. Before I jump into that, though, I just want to say thank you so much to all of you who've been so supportive and so positive about the book coming out, about this podcast. Just never underestimate the power of an encouraging email or message or social media direct message on what people are putting out and how they're putting out content. And so thank you for those of you who've reached out and said that you're enjoying the podcast or have enjoyed the book or shared it with other people. Please write reviews on Amazon. That's how we get information nowadays. That's how we trust tools and resources out there is we look for what peers are saying. And so if you have an opportunity, please leave a review on Amazon or especially on Apple Podcasts about this podcast as well. Hopefully you feel that this podcast is bringing the book to life in a multisensory way because I want to model having healthy dialogue, even if there's differences in opinions. I've had guests on the podcast that have challenged my perspective, such as Dr. Edward Gutierrez, who challenged my perspective of even using generational labels in the first place. And I enjoy those challenges. And even when I teach, I welcome the opportunity to enter into those sometimes hard conversations because I think that it's important for us to model, but also exercise the muscle of engaging in disagreement or debate or, you know, heavier conversation. It tends to reveal some of our strongest values. And usually, if we can work through it together, we realize we're valuing the same thing just from different perspectives. So I want these conversations to be authentic and hopefully modeling not only healthy dialogue, but also modeling creative ways to push out information, content, learning. So it's not just in written form, but you also have the ability to listen to this podcast and also the landing page for the book, you can find it using the QR code inside the cover of your book. We'll take you to the landing page on my website where you can see these episodes, where there's graphs that go with the book that the publisher wasn't able to put in the book. So if you want to visually see the book come to life, all of that is on that landing page. And so that was kind of my way of modeling or practicing what I'm preaching. How can you teach, distribute information in creative ways, the way various and different generations want to receive that information? So hopefully it's a holistic or a multi-sensory way to go on this journey with me. So thank you so much for joining me. I've only had like one or two maybe negative experiences so far, which I'm kind of surprised. I think the publisher was prepared for a lot of negativity surrounding the book simply because it's a hard message to, you know, encourage leaders to balance both pursuing the mission and succeeding at the mission and succeeding with people. But I think bigger than that, there's some really hard topics in the book. And in Abrams' review, talking about even just exposing some of the hard truths about our community and culture and about the institution. And so I think the publisher was a little bit concerned that I would get negative attention. And I've been overwhelmed by instead the kindness and the positive support. I did have one negative situation where I was teaching, and there was, I won't say obviously who it was, but I'm not even going to say which generation they were part of, but was concerned that I was in quotes woke. And I think it was coming out of my encouragement of generations to hear each other, to hear that younger generations are asking for some of our not our values to evolve as if to change them, but asking us to maybe lead a little bit differently. And I think they were concerned that I was leaning towards this side that said that we should change everything and throw the baby out with the bathwater. And even as I say that, I know I'm aging myself and I'm trying to stop saying that phrase, but basically they were concerned that because I'm asking generations to hear each other, to engage curiosity and empathy, that I must be, you know, on this side or leaning towards this political side of wanting the military to change. And I just want to put this caveat out there that I hope you have seen in the book and also in my teaching that I'm really not leaning towards any direction. I'm sure that there's cognitive bias and lenses and privileged perspective that I'm sure that I'm unaware of that's coming through me, but my deepest desire is really approaching this as a clinician. And I really view my role as a clinician and as a consultant as being someone who bridges divides, bridges especially people groups that see things very differently. I really enjoy helping people communicate better, to reduce the conflict, to see each other better. And I really do believe that when we can hear and actually understand each other, we actually are a lot more alike than different. We just have these different angles through which we approach the things that we're both valuing. So that's really my intention and my angle here, if you want to call it that, is really to be a bridge builder, not necessarily to err on one side or the other. I can see where both sides are coming from. I can see where those of you who are really deeply concerned about the direction of our force and whether or not we're changing too many things, I value your feelings about that. And I'm also valuing the perspective of those that are coming in saying the military has some room to make continued changes. And what does it look like for the next cohort? And I don't have all the answers for, you know, what should be. And that we're going to get to that here in a second, because one of the biggest questions I get is, well, what's the so what? Like, where does this go? Like, what do we need to do next? And that's a huge question that we're going to come back to here as we get to the end of this episode. So just know that my intention here is to continue to be a bridge builder and help you navigate what can be very challenging relationships, very challenging team dynamics. And relationships are messy. They will always be messy. Relationships with your kids, your in-laws, your spouse, your teammates, your boss, the new kid coming in, like all of it is messy. And in my counseling and coaching sessions, you know, we tend to land on this topic a lot, is that, you know, you might want to come in for help in dealing with relationships, but first we have to settle on the fact that those relationships may always be messy. And so then it is, how do we navigate the messiness of all of that and try to do the best we can to like ourselves and how we are moving through it, while also learning to grow. So that leads us into, let's talk about what I'm seeing in the different generations since the start of the year and since the book coming out. So I'm just going to kind of walk through these. I'm going to start with the boomer generation. I think that in order to explain what I'm hearing from the boomer generation, we have to remind ourselves of what their values are and what they really care about and what their motives are by default. And again, when we talk about these generations, remember, this is just a starting point. If this doesn't sound like you, if it doesn't sound like somebody you know, that's okay. It's just a beginning point of conversation so that then we can talk about why you don't feel like you identify in the boomer generation or with their values, even if you land on the timeline date of birth for boomers. So please know that these are all generalities, and if it doesn't fit you, that's okay. But it's just some of the things that I'm hearing consistently from this generation. So I think what we have to remember with the boomer generation is that they really tend to work hard. They really value having one career over the course of their lifetime. They value the loyalty to that career, to keeping their head down and getting the job done. No news is good news. If there's no feedback that they're doing something wrong, then they assume that they're doing it right. And that's how you climb the corporate ladder. That's how you get promoted. And the goal is to keep getting promoted so that you can stay in this one job that you've been loyal to most of your life. So that's kind of by default what tends to motivate them all. But a couple of the different ways that I've heard them describe it lately, as we've talked in some of these trainings about the work-family balance, I had one boomer that shared with me, you know, especially from a masculine perspective, for men in the boomer generation, it was really impressed upon them from a very young age to be the provider, the protector, that this is what you do, is you get a job and you provide for your family. And so he did a really good job explaining or saying that him working longer hours to get the job done and to do it well was the best way to provide for his family, to love his family. It was what he felt created to do. And so even though the boomer generation has gotten a lot of negativity, especially from Gen X, about them working longer hours or, let's say, valuing work over family, I thought that this particular boomer's reaction to that was really helpful in that he was describing it wasn't that they didn't want to be home. It's just that they were in a different context, a different work environment with different expectations, that was the best thing that he could do and how to provide and love his family was to work extra if that's what work required. And so as we talk about what each generation values when it comes to the work-family balance or the work-life balance, that's really important to note because you're going to hear something much different when I get to Gen Z about what their expectations are for work-family and work-life balance. So a couple other things that the boomers talked about is definitely a concern around values of the military changing when so much of their experience, especially if they had experience in before 9/11, even though there was peacetime a little bit in there, that they experienced, that it was really during those buildup years after 9/11, a really positive and good experience. Like we talk about in the book, where there is an imprinting on whatever your experience of the military was, good or bad, you imprint on that during your most vulnerable moments. Usually those vulnerable moments are in the beginning of your time of service. And so boomers really hold a lot of the traditions, a lot of the in-person experiences, a lot of the face-to-face, a lot of the camaraderie outside of social media and the internet and video games and all of that, they really cling to the lifestyle being about something really important to them that included those strong values of responsibility, loyalty, honor and duty and patriotism, especially patriotism. And so when we start to see some of that shifting in the American culture, regardless of where you stand on that, that is really creating a visceral reaction in the boomer generation. They're so far the strongest generation that shaped economics and politics. And so, of course, if we're now into a position of political division, that's really going to upset that generation a lot. They've put a lot into investing in it. And so to see it be so divisive or that patriotism changing, of course, would create a reaction in them. I also had people from the boomer generation have asked me, you know, as we talk about some of the conflicts between each of the generations, the question, something along the lines of, isn't this what every generation has to go through? These conflicts that we're having, is it really that much different than what, you know, they had to go through or what every generation must go through as they enter adulthood? And of course, I agree with that. But I will say there are some differences that we are experiencing now compared to the past. For example, for a lot of our leaders right now, they're in a difficult spot where it's hard to lead when at any moment your decision could be immediately posted on social media or an article written about you, or something could be immediately published publicly shaming you for that decision. And so what we're seeing now is leaders being a little bit more afraid of leading, or maybe more avoidant of taking on those leadership roles, because it feels just so much more vulnerable than it has before. So yes, to those of you who ask the question, hasn't these generational conflicts just always been there? Yes, I believe that's true. But I do believe that things are different now, and they'll be different in the future too. But for right now, they're different, and we're navigating what does it mean to be a leader publicly, and what does it mean to make these decisions knowing that they could be used against us at any given moment, sometimes without us even knowing about it, if somebody has published or posted something about you and you weren't made aware of it. So that is very different. Not to mention, our country is also evaluating our military, at least from a distance. And so there's a lot of opinions right now about our culture, a lot of opinions about the decisions that we're making. And so it's really difficult, I think, right now for everybody, especially during an election year, to talk about where they stand on anything. I think it's also difficult to be in the military and know where you stand on something when at any given point, even the American culture could label our community as woke or judge some of those decisions. I mean, a good example was when West Point was evaluating their use of the words honor and duty, and it got circulated widely on LinkedIn with people ripping it apart about the decision that they made to adjust that wording, or at least where that wording was mentioned. And so it's just a good example that any decision that you make as a leader can be judged by our community, but also by the American community as well. So it's just a very difficult time to be a leader in some ways. Hopefully a great time to be a leader, and a time when we are choosing to have courage to step into those leadership roles. But I do want to acknowledge that many of you out there are asking yourselves whether or not it's worth it and whether or not you want to give it a go. So, okay, so let's talk about, as far as the Gen X generation, I am a Gen X, and so it's interesting that I didn't even write down Gen X because we are the forgotten generation, and so it's easy to skip over Gen X and just go straight to millennials. We tend to be a quieter generation, and so a lot of what I'm seeing from the Gen X generation is pretty similar to what I've already seen in the book. There is some weariness, there's some burnout that's happening in the Gen X generation. There is a lot of people that are saying they're just trying to get across the 20-year finish line, trying to get to retirement. And I mentioned this in the book, but just a continuation of some quiet quitting, just, you know, and I don't call that quiet quitting in a judgmental way, because there's a lot of people who gave so much, especially if you served any amount of the two decades of global conflict since 9/11. Where Gen X is really starting to pull back and go, I've given the best of my youth to this institution and I'm ready to take care of me. my family, to enjoy some family time and try to get to that retirement line. There's plenty that are still just really enjoying it and are all in. But I would say a majority are kind of reaching this place where they are just needing to talk about self-care and recovery a little bit more. And a little bit quieter in talking about it because, you know, maybe you're so close to that finish line, you don't want to jeopardize it. If that's you, just know that there's a lot of other people that are feeling the same way. It's very normal. In fact, I remember the boomer generation starting to go a little bit quiet at about this season of life when, again, you're turning your focus more towards family and some of those other responsibilities that you have. And I think that's just part of life. And so I think that's where Gen X is. So we're going to move on to millennials. And so what I thought was really interesting lately as I was working with the millennial generation in various workshops was I had one millennial that recently said, and I thought it was just so bold and courageous for them to say this, especially when they said it in front of everybody in the room of various generations. He said to me, or said to the group, that they felt very sandwiched in the middle between Gen Z and the boomer generation and felt very uncomfortable in leading because on one hand, they are trying to serve and lead Gen Z in the way that Gen Z is asking, which requires empathy, listening, leaning in with curiosity, mentoring, a lot more hands-on or a lot more just present and engaged types of leadership requests. And then the boomer generation who was basically telling them that they were evolving or changing too much or don't coddle them, or I even had one boomer describe it as shut up and color, that why were they being so soft on the Gen Z generation? And so what the millennials were saying was they felt really pressured in the middle, that it was a lose-lose situation and that they didn't feel like they could win in either direction. If they really leaned in to be a stronger leader for Gen Z and what Gen Z was asking, then they failed the boomer generation. And if they leaned towards the expectations of what the boomer generation was asking them in their leadership style, then they would fail Gen Z. And so we're seeing a level of burnout for millennials as they're trying to navigate between these generations and their different expectations. And I think that that is contributing to the retention crisis that we have and towards the mass exodus that we're seeing from millennials because it's just getting very challenging and difficult. I think that their values lean a little bit more towards Gen Z values. So I think they are a little bit more comfortable than, let's say, the Gen X and boomer generation with leading in the way Gen Z is asking. But their OERs, their need to please the superiors above them really is putting them in some tough situations where they don't know how to succeed on both fronts. So that really made me lean in with some empathy and curiosity for the millennial generation, those leaders, those of you out there who really feel the struggle right now and what it means. When it comes to work-life balance, we're continuing to see the millennial generation figure out how to walk that line of almost like a 50-50 split between valuing work and valuing life. And so it seems like the millennial generation is doing a really good job saying, hey, if this can be a 9-to-5 job, then I'm coming in at 9 and I'm leaving at 5 and then I'm going to be home with my family. And if that means that we don't come to a unit function or maybe even a military ball or whatever, however they can best protect that family time, they really are trying. So now that millennials are in leadership, they're doing a really great job trying to model that, like take your leave, enjoy your family time. And maybe I'm curious to what those of you would say about this. So please reach out and give me some feedback. But I wonder how many millennials are actually planning activities and social gatherings outside of work, or if you find yourself more valuing family time and trying to avoid that if possible. So that would be an interesting thing to hear from you guys on. So if you have feedback on that, if you're a millennial leader, do you still want to provide those traditional family org days or family support events outside of business hours? Do you still find value in that, or are you trying to honor and protect family time and so doing less of that? So that would be great to hear from you guys on that. So I think the summary on millennials right now is that they are tired. They've given a lot. They're in leadership roles. They're trying to value their family time. They're trying to keep that 50-50 split, and they feel very much in conflict between the youngest generation and the oldest generation. So really interesting to watch that and how they're going to navigate that. But I think you guys are doing such a good job. So keep at asking those hard questions. So leverage those in good, powerful, positive ways to get the information that you need to succeed. And if it's not something you feel like you're succeeding at, then use that, again, that strength in collaboration and dialogue to explain where you're at and what you need. So I know what most people are interested in is in Gen Z. So let's talk about some of the things that I've seen from Gen Z. When we talk about the topic of trust, what I've been saying lately is that the boomer generation trusts until it's broken. And the Gen Z is in the opposite extreme of that, in that they don't trust until you earn it. And I think that that's really important as you navigate these relationships to understand. Boomers get really frustrated that there's not the automatic trust and respect that should be given to them because they are elders or have authority or have more experience or wisdom to offer. And so I think some of them are thrown by the fact that Gen Z doesn't trust until you earn it. And that earning of trust tends to happen through relationship building, through showing that you're competent, showing that you, so competency, remember, is not, do you know all the information? It's, can you make sense of that information? Because again, Gen Z can Google almost anything, right? They're looking for in a leader, are you somebody that I can trust? Are you somebody that understands the information out there? Are you competent in the information that's out there? So that's one big difference. But I also want to just encourage those of you who are out there leading Gen Z that they desperately want to learn. They want to trust. They're eager to be mentored. They are eager to learn, not just the information that they could Google themselves. They're eager to learn how to do this lifestyle well, how to lead themselves, how to do well in this job, and they want to be taught. So remember that just because they have access to all this information and because they are looking for that authenticity and don't outrightly trust, that doesn't mean that they don't want to or that they're distanced from everyone and that they're disengaged. They are a little bit quieter than the millennial generation, so it takes a little bit longer to pull them out of their shells, but they are definitely in these younger years of their life eager to grow, and we need to remember that. I think my biggest encouragement for those of you leading Gen Z that I'm finding myself saying this on repeat a lot is when you are looking at a Gen Z that you're leading, it could be your kids, it could be someone in your formation, and you see some of that immaturity or you see some of those things, maybe it's coping skills, maybe it's critical thinking skills, whatever you social skills, whatever it is that you feel like they're lacking, I want you to pause and see if you can remember who you were when you were that age, when you were early in your 20s or in your mid-20s. What did you not know then that you know now? I think it's very easy for all of us, especially you can see this in your parenting if you're a parent. We don't realize how much we've grown, evolved, matured, and changed over time until we're face to face with someone who doesn't have that maturity. And I think we have to remember, and again, this is easier to see in parenting when you're parenting your kids and you can go, why don't you know that? Like, why didn't you think of that? Well, they're 12. Right? Or they're 20 or they're whatever. They haven't faced the same things that we have faced that got us to this place where we did have the credit or do have the critical thinking skills or the wisdom to make that decision in a different way or how to engage in conversation or relationships that are, you know, those they're new to them and they're not new to us. And so I just find myself saying on repeat, are we expecting something of Gen Z that is not what they would have, what anybody would have known how to do at this season of life? If yes, it is, then that's another conversation. But a lot of times it comes down to maturity and just remembering that they're still learning and they've just entered into this like adulthood. And so just remember that there is a lot still left to learn and that you were also in that same place needing to learn the same exact things on some level that they are too. And that will help you like zoom out and take a deep breath and have some patience to decide the next step for you, which is, am I willing to teach them? Am I willing to mentor them? Am I willing to like get engaged and involved with them? And that I think is a bigger question. We're going to get to that also here in a second about our willingness nowadays in our culture to actually engage in these relationships. So the last thing I wanted to cover on Gen Z, I thought this was super interesting. I taught this one group and there was a good 50 or more Gen Z, another huge group, 50 or more of millennials and in the room. And I really had a great opportunity to engage with a lot of the Gen Z. And I had them in separate groups, Gen Z versus millennial. And I had them writing down what their values were, what their work style was, what their communication style was. And what was interesting is that the millennial group tends to, every time I do this exercise, the millennial group is always collaborating and working together and talking together and fleshing out these ideas so that they're all in agreement. This one particular group was so big, they split in two and had two sheets of paper with two different people writing on those pieces of paper in a very organized fashion. So it was so super fun to watch them work. And then the Gen Z group was literally almost like a train wreck. There was no hierarchy. There was no order. Nobody knew who was going to take charge. There was three different people holding the markers. Everybody was talking on top of each other. They were just really struggling to find order for themselves. Again, I think it's a little bit more of a maturity issue. I think it's a little bit more of just not having experience and the pressure of trying to get it right in this particular setting. But what was really interesting about this group is that when I had them present, like, what are your values? What is your work style? Remember when I said that boomers were willing to stay at work till 9 o'clock and millennials kind of maybe, in my words, have this 50-50 split of 50% of energy going towards work, 50% going towards life. When it came to the Gen Z group, they described their work-life balance as a 40-60 split. In other words, 40% of their energy going towards work and 60% going towards life. Now, as soon as they said that, they were scoffed at. Everybody in the room made the assumption, maybe like those of you listening right now, that they were assuming that Gen Z was basically saying that they didn't want to work hard. And that really offended the Gen Z group because that was not what they meant by it. When they had the opportunity to explain it, it was actually pretty powerful because they said that actually, they just value their quality of life so much that if work is invading their life outside of work, if it's causing frustration, if it's a toxic work environment, if it's upsetting them outside of work, then they're going to reevaluate the work setting. So from their standpoint, if we're coming to work and we're still dealing with topics like sexual harassment and toxic leadership and work environments, some of them were complaining about the barracks and the living conditions that they were in. And this was creating stress for them outside of work. It's starting to invade their quality of life. And that's why they were basically trying to set a boundary that I think all of us can value and understand. We just didn't know that we could verbalize it or advocate for ourselves about it, that if it's making us miserable, then I need to reevaluate this life choice, this career choice. And that's what they were saying, that we want to value our sanity, our quality of life, our experience of life outside of work, and that work doesn't define us and they don't need it their whole life to revolve around it. And I thought that that was a very healthy way to say that. It was a very powerful moment to watch them describe it. Okay, so that is basically the updates on the different generations and the new things that I'm hearing from those generations. Now I wanted to quickly transition and talk about what are some of the biggest topics and questions that I'm hearing. What are we seeing in today's force and how do we figure out next steps on how to lead in light of them? So the first one goes back to this concern that we're hearing everywhere that Gen Z is struggling with critical thinking skills, maybe social skills or coping skills. I could do a whole workshop and class about why some of those coping skills are a challenge, I think, for all of us right now, but especially for Gen Z, given what they've been through with COVID in their background. I personally am not seeing attention issues or a short attention span in Gen Z. I think they absolutely can be attentive or focus on the things that interest them. And that is, that piques my curiosity a whole lot more of what holds their attention versus what does not. And if there's something that I'm doing that doesn't align with capturing their attention, then I need to, as a leader and as someone who teaches, think about how can I teach differently in order to help them stay engaged. Doesn't mean that I revolve my teaching solely around one group, but it's something for me to be mindful of. But one of the things that we are hearing about is the struggle for critical thinking skills and the implied tasks between the bigger tasks of you're being asked to do steps 1, 2, and 3, and that they might get stuck between steps, 1 and 2 of like the little decisions that happen between 1 and 2. And so we would call those critical thinking skills. Do we have the ability to think through critically and give ourselves the thoughtful, concentrated time to think through how am I going to execute task 1 in order to get to task 2? So at first, a lot of people were saying that Gen Z was struggling with this. What I'm actually hearing is that every generation is struggling with critical thinking and their attention to detail when it comes to those implied tasks. Now, first of all, I think this frees us from labeling one generation being worse than the other. I encourage you to zoom out and first take a look at, is this something that in your life you could be working on as well? Are there traces of this showing up in your own behaviors, in your own thinking, in your own ability to get things done throughout the day, or your own energy and how you would engage relationships? So when you see another group that could be doing better at fill in the blank, zoom out and ask yourself, am I doing well at that? Am I succeeding at that myself? If not, think about what do you need in order to grow in that area? And I think it will help us all be a little bit more patient. I think it's happening across the board because we are so inundated with so much information, but also choices throughout the day. When you think about it, we wake up and we have a gazillion choices that we could have for breakfast. There's so many choices of where to go to lunch, so many choices on what to have for dinner, so many choices on what we could watch on TV that night. I think back on some research that came out in the 90s. It was a really interesting study where they were trying to find, metaphorically, they were trying to find who is the most miserable person on the planet. Like not an actual specific person, but in general, what leads a person to be unhappy? And could they narrow it down to what might be happening in a person's life to make them the most miserable? And they actually narrowed it down. Again, this is not a real person, but they narrowed it down to a 41-year-old female lawyer was the most miserable person on the planet. And the reason for this is that women typically, especially in the 90s, but probably still today, typically have a lot more choices, or at least they feel like they might have a lot more choices than men do. While men still deal with this stigma or deal with the pressure of providing for their family and working that job, that they feel that there'd be a stigma if they were to be a stay-at-home dad, let's say, the expectation is still very there for them to get that job and work a full-time job. Women have the choice to work or not work, even though many of them want to work, it's still a choice. They can stay home and raise their kids and be a full-time stay-at-home mom. They could work a full-time career. They could work a part-time career. They could have children. They could not have children. If they do have children, they could take maternity leave, or should I not take maternity leave? And so particularly for this fictional 41-year-old female lawyer, it was, yes, it sounds like she's successful and has a successful career, but the amount of choices that she not only had to make to get there, but the amount of choices that she also had to turn down in order to get there leads her to be much more unhappy in the exhaustion of all those choices. So this research basically narrowed it down to this: the more choices that we have, the less happy we are with the choice that we make. So we all want more choices. We all want to have the freedom to choose and the control in choosing. But when we have too many choices, there is this paralysis that sets in. There could be the choice between two rights. It's very rarely a right versus wrong choice. So it's a fatigue from making all these choices where there could be several options of where we go out for dinner. And there's several restaurants that have good ratings. So if we choose this one and have a bad experience, we should have chosen the other one. So hopefully that's making sense to you right now, is that we have decision fatigue. We have just information download fatigue. And all of us are just consuming so much information, so much multi-sensory information, so many choices and engaging in those choices, so much relational stress as well, that I think that we are fatigued and burned out. And because of that, I think there's a lot of us that are showing up to life and work just basically hoping somebody's just going to give us the answer, right? Just tell me how to succeed. So when you give me tasks 1, 2, and 3, can you just also give me all the little tasks between 1 and 2 so that I know I'm going to succeed at that task? And so that I don't have to risk thinking it all the way through, getting it wrong, and then having to go back and do it again, right? You can see where this is coming from, where people are thinking less. There's less of that critical thinking energy where we're slowing down and actually paying attention to what's in front of us and thinking all the way through. In fact, I would say for any of us, a good challenge would be to see how long can you sit and read a book, or even a more difficult challenge, how long can you sit somewhere in quiet and silence and not doing anything, not deciding to do anything, but just be still? And how long are you able to sit there before you want to pick up your phone or device and numb out? I think that we're all losing the ability to quiet our spirits, to be mindful in the moment, to be thoughtful all the way through. When I lead this workshop and we get to this end where we're dialoguing about everything we've just covered and learned, and people are asking, like, what do we do? Where do we go from here? It's amazing that I'm having to say things like, you know, serving people and being kind still works, right? Like if I'm talking to a group of spouses, especially older spouses who are more burned out and exhausted and ready to rightfully go recover and maybe go into retirement and enjoy being a grandparent, let's say, I find myself having to say, you know, when you're in a room with a group of people, especially with other generations, and you see that spouse in the corner of the room and she's trying to drink a cup of coffee and hold her toddler at the same time, you know it still works to go over and ask if you can take care of the toddler for just a few minutes so that she can enjoy that cup of coffee. Like, we're forgetting how to be mindful and thoughtful and how to lean in and actually be present and thoughtful of what another person needs. We're moving so fast and we're consuming so much information. We're skipping over the implied tasks, the implied thoughtfulness that once not only made us more human, but were also things that other people used to do for us that made a huge difference in our day and in our life. Like when you think back on some of the key moments of when somebody really not only met a need for you, but was an outstanding leader, chances are, most likely, you remember being seen, heard, that somebody put themselves in your shoes and went out of their way to do something for you that just required a little bit of thoughtfulness. And we're losing that as human beings. We're just skipping over everything and each other throughout the day and then crashing at the end of the day. We're becoming less human. We're to the point we're even asking AI to not only make decisions for us, but to humanize content because we don't have the energy to take what AI has given us, let's say in a social media post, and actually think through critically how to make it sound more human. Like, why use that energy when I could just ask AI to do that? I have not jumped on this bandwagon. Believe me, it's tempting. But I'm not even saying that it's wrong, but I am saying, like, are we slowing down enough to be mindful? The last example that I have of that is I'm noticing that when we are scrolling through social media, if you come across a post that's maybe somebody that you know that's going through a hard time, we tend to pause on those posts and we allow ourselves to have an emotional reaction, a moment of like, oh man, that must be terrible that they're going through that. And then after we have that feeling, we kind of keep going to the next thing. And there's something that's registering in our minds that in our brain, we actually think we connected with that person because we had an emotional response to their post. But that doesn't mean that we actually engaged with the person. There are people going through difficult things who have told me, I haven't heard from anybody in months, yet a few people have liked my posts. Like that really shows that we are having a feeling for a split second, but we've lost the connective tissue between us and other humans. And I think it's something we really need to watch out for. Two more things before we wrap up. Number one, when we talk about these scary new hot topics and disagreeing about these topics, especially when we talk about social media, when we talk about technology, we talk about all these things that are going to ruin our children and video games. And are we like throwing away face-to-face contact for the virtual world? Like, you know, all these big hot topics, even AI, can be really scary, especially if you're a parent trying to navigate how am I going to raise my kids with these very big topics. I just want to encourage you that, you know, history repeats itself sometimes for good, sometimes for bad. But the good thing about history repeating itself is that we eventually figure things out. Like, yes, there are these rare moments of destruction culturally, but it is through finding these limits, it is through finding and having these difficult conversations that we find where we land and agree in the middle. For example, mobile phones came on the scene in 2007 or so, or at least the mobile devices, the smart devices, 2007 or so. And of course, we swung to an extreme where we have become completely consumed by these devices. And now we're starting to see, so we went from totally in-person, no devices, to swinging to the other extreme of consumed by our devices. And now we're finding our middle. Gen Z is starting to move to flip phones. I'm hearing millennial parents are aiming to not give mobile phones to their kids until they're about 16. Now, I have Gen Z kids, so I'm like, good luck with that. Let me know how you do with it. But you can see that we're trying. We're trying to find a good balance in the middle. Same thing I think we're going to find with video games, right? We went from Gen X, us starting out with video games in our home, going to the extreme of virtual reality. We're going to find a middle ground of where do we value face-to-face and virtual reality or connecting online in a healthier way. And I think that's good news for AI too. I think there's a lot of concern and rightfully so about AI, but as we see these new topics come in, just remember, we will go from one extreme to the other until we find the middle. So we went in a world where there was no AI, lots of that critical thinking, lots of that doing the work ourselves, swing. We're going to see that pendulum swing to what does it look like for AI to be doing a lot of things before we see the consequences of that, what I like to call our guardrails, our limits, where we hit the limit on it and go, we can go no further. And now we need to start swinging the other direction before we find the middle. So just remember that as you are parenting, as you're navigating these very big topics, just remember as each new topic comes in, we tend to swing from one extreme to the other before we find where we actually healthily, usually as a large group or as a culture, where we decide to land on the middle in that. And I think just to wrap up, I just want to go back to what I described about the Gen Z and the millennial group that I was teaching and how Gen Z was really struggling to find order in their small group when they were working together. You know, I teach a lot. I talk about it in the book, and I also teach about it a lot, the importance of evolve or educate. On any of these topics that we're trying to bridge and communicate through, where do we need to evolve? Where is a generation asking us to evolve? And can we evolve? Because we need to be able to evolve on some things always. And there's going to be other things that we can't evolve on that we need to be able to educate on why or mentor why we cannot change that. And I know that hierarchy, the importance of order in our military culture, is one of those things that we value that we cannot change. When we go to war, we need to be able to function with some order. Meanwhile, there's these other things that we're learning to evolve about, whether we like them or not, that is about rolling up our sleeves and beards and waivers for different things that we're trying to figure out. So when we got to the end of this training, there was a whole lot of talk about, and they did such a great job throughout the training. There was things that they were rightfully advocating for about their barracks, about how do they submit complaints and give feedback that the leaders actually wanted to hear. But Gen Z was saying, but we never hear back from you on whether or not you did anything about those things. So it's discouraging for us to keep giving feedback if we don't know where it goes. And I knew that this debate about what does Gen Z need to feel motivated and how do we lead Gen Z, knowing that they need and want mentoring, knowing that they want to be inspired. I tried to close with this, and hopefully this helps someone else. So feel free to use it if you feel like it would be helpful. I reminded them of how difficult it was for them to get the task done without any order whatsoever. And I asked them, did you crave order when it was chaos? And then I connected that to, as human beings, we all want order when there's chaos. It's what helps us evolve our parenting. It's what helps us set boundaries in marriage. It's what helps us set boundaries in the workplace. Anytime we find ourselves in a place of chaos, we will crave order and we will want to do what's within our control to bring order to it. And I told them, you know, when the Afghanistan withdrawal happened, it was chaotic. It was not at all what we are used to when it comes to working together in the military. Like all of America, and it seemed like our military too, was just, it felt chaotic. We didn't know what was happening. But it was in the midst of that chaos that the service members who were their boots on the ground knew what they were trained to do, knew who to report to, knew what each of their responsibilities were, and everybody did what they were trained to do. They fell back on their training. They fell back on the hierarchy of order. They trusted the leaders in front of them, and they led those around them as well in the way that they would had been trained to do. And I reminded them that it was because of that order, because of that hierarchy, because of that willingness to trust in those moments, to trust the leaders, trust the training, that leveraging that trust is what helped our troops and also our allied partners that participated in that evacuation as well. It helped them not only save hundreds of thousands of lives, they executed it flawlessly with no planes crashing. When it came down to the execution of our force, it was flawless and it was heroic. And it was the most impressive thing that I personally have ever seen, especially since we were pretty much watching it live streamed, right? And so I encouraged them and I empowered them that in their search for trust, in their process of questioning why we do the things that we do, that it is okay to ask those questions. It's okay for you to advocate for yourself. It's okay for you to demand better housing if you're in a situation that's unsafe and that is condemned, right? Like we can't blame them for asking for things that all of us would also need to ask for ourselves. Those things are healthy, that it is completely their responsibility and no one else's to know when they need to stand up for themselves and advocate for themselves if they know that they should be treated better. All of us have to learn that in adulthood, and all of us have to have the courage to ask for the things that we need in order to stay healthy, especially in the workplace. However, they also needed to remember that the leaders around them were doing the best that they could with the information that they had, and that there will be times when the order and the hierarchy that we are challenging is the very thing that we must trust in order to get the job done, and that we'll know when the time is to do it, and that that's why we must value it. So what I want you to understand that I did in that moment is I was doing my best to vision cast what I knew that they would need to embrace, to adopt, and to not challenge, so that when they found themselves in that moment, they would value it more. It's okay in this workshop, in this moment, that you're asking hard questions. But on the things that we cannot change, there is a reason why it's in place. And I'm here to remind you and inspire you and vision cast and give you a mental picture of how powerful that is and why we need it and what happens when we do it together. That when you lead with that ability to vision cast and excite them, especially around a cause that currently is not happening around us, we're not in a global conflict right now, that they are seeing every day, right? So being able to vision cast that in the future, that when it's time, this is what we have to value together to get the job done. That's when you plant a seed for them that now they understand the why. Now they're grounded in the reason why. And I know that for some of you, that sounds exhausting. Why should I have to do that? But that comes down to that if you find yourself so burned out and exhausted that you don't have the energy or motivation to lead the next generation, to empower, to encourage the next generation, take a look at, zoom out, what are some changes that I can do in my life right now that would help create the bandwidth so that I do have the energy? Because getting to encourage the next generation is a get to. It is an opportunity, and it's not something I would want you to miss out on simply because you sold that opportunity to make a whole bunch of decisions about what Netflix shows and what restaurants to go to and whatever other less meaningful choices you had throughout the day. So protect your mind, protect your bandwidth. Remind yourself of why you got in the first place. Remind yourself of the opportunity that you have to motivate someone else, to serve someone else, to see someone else. Everybody wants to be seen. And I know you want to be seen too. So take care of yourselves. I hope that this was helpful. Stay tuned for some really, really wonderful, powerful interviews coming up about the Afghanistan exit, as well as some that will wrap up the whole series that you're not going to want to miss. And stay tuned. There's more coming out next week.
Are you hurt? Are you searching? You need healing and discerning. There's an answer to your questions hidden in the dark. From the trauma you can't run from any longer, there's an answer here together, looking to the stars. We will win this fight together. We don't walk this road alone. We will
Military Culture Shift podcast is sponsored by New Res and written and produced by me, author, speaker, and military clinical consultant Corey Weathers. The closing credit song is Rise Above the Storm, written and performed by Afghanistan veteran Maxine Rise. This is a supplemental leadership podcast for the book Military Culture Shift, The Impact of War, Money, and Generational Perspective on Morale, Retention, and Leadership. Copies of the book can be purchased on Amazon, militaryfamilybooks.com, and your other favorite retailers. More information, including graphs, data, and other resources mentioned in the book, can be found on my website, CoreyWeathers.com.